You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 946.IS3821, certificate number 42734. The placebo effect.
We need a cure! We need a cure!
Why, the only cure is bed rest. Anything I give you would only be a placebo.
Where do we get these placebos?
Maybe there's some in this truck.
Are you worried about long COVID? John?
Yes.
Of all the lengths of COVID to get,
yes,
what would be the worst one? Long, right?
The longest COVID is the one I am the mostest afraid of.
The longest COVID. It's like an unfinished Hemingway novel or something.
It's a great, like, big cast movie, The Longest COVID. It's got every star
Four
in Hollywood.
4 hours long, a young James Garner, an old Burt Lancaster. We love it.
I'm afraid of all the COVIDs. I don't want any of them. But particularly one that has lasting consequences.
Did you know, and I don't think you did, because I've withheld this from you, We haven't recorded in a couple months.
It's been a while. You were down doing something, and then you were somewhere else.
I was backpacking. I have not been to England.
Oh, sorry. You were in Peru.
I was backpacking with some friends.
Yeah.
And then I was at a family reunion in Oregon.
Right. And then you were in a hovercraft.
Yes. At some point in between, I was in a hover. That's the fastest way to get from Peru to Oregon. If the Concorde doesn't fly that route anymore.
No, but the hovercraft, light speed.
Both of those trips turned into super spreader events, in fact.
Of course they did. Now, wait a minute. Backpacking in Peru, I would assume that, not to use technical terms, but there wouldn't be sufficient viral load if you were hiking
You're outdoors.
Yeah.
In the thin air of the Andes Mountains.
This is why I can go to baseball games and not wear a mask, because the wind carries the virus away. Isn't that true?
They're saying it's less true of a BA5.
Oh, dear.
I mean, this is going to be less interesting months from now when there's, you know, the Omicron variant has...
Yeah.
Omega variant has killed everyone.
30 years from now when people are like, what was that? Oh, the Spanish flu? But
I remember
Grandma
had that. Yeah, they're saying with BA5, even outdoors in a crowd, like depending on how crowded you're outdoors, it's not, nothing's guaranteed anymore.
So wait a minute, you're saying that you caught the COVID?
I got the novel coronavirus.
Oh boy.
After 2 years and 3 months.
Oh boy. And you're sitting here?
Months?
How
I'm
long ago was that?
Breathing all over you. 2 weeks ago. So we did our hike in Peru. The last day of the trip, we go back to civilization. And suddenly,
hey, wait a minute. No, Peru is a fully civilized country.
I'm not saying I flew back to Miami. I'm saying we got back to Cuzco.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Where there's a McDonald's and a KFC.
Yeah, I mean, flying back to Miami, I would say you'd be going backwards.
Wow. So now all the Cuban Republicans are mad at you. Got it.
They were mad at me already.
And I started to get like a sniffle in my nose and a tickle in my throat.
Oh, that sounds cute.
Oh, I like how it's all these fun words for being sick. I just have a little sniffle, a little tickle. And the next day, people started testing positive.
So you were still in Peru and conscious that you were...
It was the day I was flying from Lima to... Where was I going? Dallas to Seattle.
Dallas. Boy, you're going back in time.
No way to get COVID there.
But
masks illegal at the airport. Some guy with two six shooters just firing in the air if he sees a mask.
Suffering succotash. So just to get this on the record, when did you feel the tickle? Were you in the hotel? When? How?
I was in a bus driving back from the trail to the hotel.
But it conceivably at that point could have been an allergy.
Everybody on the trip had a cough. Not everybody, but a bunch of people had a cough and had kept testing negative. Everybody had tested before they came.
You were at a high altitude, and there's such a thing as a high altitude cough.
Sure. You know, I had felt kind of fatigued and winded just on every pair of stairs.
Every pair of stairs.
You know, often in Peru, they have two stairs, and then you go up to a little mini floor, and then you go two more stairs up, and there's a little desk or a landing.
It's one of the ancient architecture styles. Two stairs.
Yeah, they didn't have the wheel, the Incas, but they had invented two. They had never occurred to them they could put three stairs together.
Pair of stairs.
Because the alpacas can't do it. So I was in the position of, but I thought, oh, this is just the cough that has been going around our group. Cause we were outside the whole time, but you eat in makeshift tents.
Wait a minute. Makeshift tents?
Yeah.
You didn't just have regular tents?
You had to make tents.
Out
I would
of
say
leaves?
A regular tent is a nice wedding pavilion. I'm a city boy.
Yeah.
This was a makeshift tent in the sense that, a series of porters had to
make it,
had to, pitch it.
They constructed a tent out of local berries.
Yeah, out of what do you find in the
Andes
mountains?
Yeah, like sun-baked wood and
llama skins.
Yeah.
The Inca Trail is kind of this 4-day hike we did is kind of a make-work project by the Peruvian government. You know, there's not a lot of jobs in the Sierra. And so we had 19 people in our group.
That's a large group.
It is, but there's also I think about upwards of 30 local porters and guides and chefs and...
So there were 50 people.
Yes.
All making tents.
All crowding together.
I'm guessing you 19 weren't making tents. I'm guessing you were sitting on
Because
the
there
rocks.
Was an odd number. And apparently I was the only one that sent the, hey, I want my own hotel room email. It turned out it was $60 to get your own hotel room. And I was like, why is everyone not doing this? I became the odd man out with his own tent.
Oh, but your own tent.
But I still had the sniffle. I still had the tickle.
Where'd you get the sniffle tickle?
I assume at meals. I mean, you can say, hey, we took every precaution. But really, everybody says that, and they mean 100 different things.
Yeah.
We took every precaution might just mean I can get out of bed, you know. Or it could mean we all took PCR tests every day for a week, and nobody's eaten in a restaurant since January 2020.
But you're sure that you got it on the trip and not like in the airplane on the way down?
I'm not patient zero. Somebody flew in and the whole trip was just feeling kind of achy and not well and had a lot of muscle pain. He thought he had just, you know, sat weird in a coach seat on the airplane, I think.
Good job, this guy.
Yeah.
Where'd he come from? Dallas?
Matt. I want to say Boise? No, Salt Lake, I think. A state, yes.
Dallas, Boise, and Salt Lake are all the same.
A Mountain West state where every single person has had COVID six times,
right?
Basically.
Well, those are their freedoms.
He just thought he had sat weird on the plane, and so he had, you know, back and neck pain the whole time. And I now kind of think, this guy brought the Utah COVID to Cusco. Cusco-vid.
Uh-huh.
So I thought to myself, I don't know if this is COVID or not, but I already am checked into these flights.
Have you reached back to your hosts and figured out whether 600 people in the Andes have already died of this strain of Utah COVID?
It's very hard to do contact tracing at 14,000 feet.
Yeah, I suppose.
You get, if you try to write down the numbers and you get dizzy.
So you check into the flight and you're like, maybe I'm fine.
I'm like, I'm really hoping that this is, because other the guy I had, I guess I hadn't roomed with anyone, but the guy, my friend who I'd gone on the trip with had tested negative. And then he texts me and says, hey, I just tested positive.
Where was he? Where was he when he texted you?
He was still in some hotel.
Oh, in Peru.
Yeah. And he had booked, I think he had, and I think he actually, after he tested positive, he had time to go check into a hotel in Lima and quarantine for a week until he tested negative.
Hmm, nice life.
I got on the plane and said, you know what? I'm going to keep my 95 on and just
put a plastic bag over your
stay away
and...
from everyone. Yeah. You know, those yellow fallout suits
we bought for the
omnibus photo op that we're wearing right now.
Yeah.
I just put that on.
Because I
didn't like either choice. I did not like getting on a plane and what if I, with symptoms. And I did not like, I'm in Peru, maybe not for inconvenience reasons, but like if I get COVID, maybe I don't want to be in Cusco, Peru.
It's hard to get DoorDash to bring you barbecued ribs in Cusco, harder than it is in Seattle.
You can get guinea pig ribs, all the guinea pig ribs you can eat.
Alpaca
tartare was on every menu I saw that week.
So
I got home and immediately tested positive.
But not to ask too
guilty in hindsight.
Not to ask too much, not to be too intrusive.
No, it's fine.
But when you
this
are
is
on
a safe space.
When you're on a fun jaunt, a make work jaunt to the Andes, do you fly first class or do you fly economy comfort or do you, I know you well enough to know that you're not in row 34 in a middle seat
between two
ferns.
Enormous Brazilian men. It's always a mix. If it's an airline where I have status, maybe I'm hoping for an upgrade.
Sure, you mix it up.
In this case,
only airline you have status with is Alaska
and Delta.
Right?
I have.
Oh, good job. Good job. And I take credit for that.
Yes. Yeah. It's a mere gold medallion. It's not as easy to get Delta status as when I lived in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
You know how it is
when
you're just gold. They keep rolling people over. It means nothing now. Everybody's gold. In this case, I had booked far enough in advance, and these South American flights, it's basically business class. There's not like lie flat first class. You're in your own cubicle kind of a vibe.
You're saying the highest.
Yeah. The best you can do would be the equivalent of US business class or.
Right.
And so I sat up front and that was part of how I justified it to myself. Like, it's only one other person, and she's like 6 feet away.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I justified it saying,
I'm only going to get the rich.
All these swells. I'm going to take them out, finally, as the only true socialist in first class.
Is coughing on millionaires compatible with Marxism?
God, it has to be, right? What is the Marxist take on using plague as a class weapon?
It doesn't redistribute their income very well. It just goes to their awful children.
Right. But there are more
just as
children.
Mine would if my planet crashed.
But you have two children, so your wealth would then go, well, I guess you and Mindy's wealth would go just directly to your children. There wouldn't be any.
That doesn't redistribute anything.
Eventually, though, there's a kind of alluvial tale.
You need to find out who has 10 kids and cough on them.
Cough on them.
That distributes the wealth somewhat, an order of magnitude.
Well, so anyway, you came home.
It was not bad. I just stayed in the guest room downstairs and avoided my family.
And you didn't give it to Mindy?
Never gave it to anybody. Hopefully not even in first class on LATAM or American Airlines or whatever I was flying.
We'll never know. You know, I flew on that airline one time and I still get spam emails from them.
LATAM?
From 19... When did I fly? 2006. And I still get emails.
It's time to press the no gracias button.
All in Spanish. And I'm like, I'm probably not going to take advantage of this great deal.
If you were flying from Peru to the United States in late June of 2022.
In first class. Or quote unquote business class. So now, your voice sounds a little scratchy right now, just to add a little more cuteness to it. You had a little sniffle, you had a little tickle, and now it's a little scratchy.
It was... After 5 days, my symptoms started to drop off, and I was like tired all the time. I never had a fever.
Did you have trouble breathing?
A little shortness of breath.
that's the thing I worry about. I don't like shortness of breath.
What's your favorite length of breath?
I want my breaths to be as long as possible.
Let me get this straight. Your favorite length of COVID is not long. That's your least favorite length of COVID.
I want COVID and a long breath.
Fair enough. And then within 8 to 10 days, I was testing negative antigen testing and
running up the stairs as fast as you could.
Feeling great. Yeah. And I was just in time to go on this family reunion. I was like, wow, like I quarantined with COVID during the only week this summer where I could have just sat in a room. I was doing the copy edit on my book. It worked out fine.
Now that's another thing. You don't like to be inactive.
No, it was pretty rough.
And so you're trapped in the basement.
Even though I had COVID, I was like, hey, I'm going to go walk the dogs in the park. I got to get out of here. It was driving me bananas.
Yeah. So I managed it.
I had For All Mankind season 3 to watch. That was what got me through.
Yeah. You texted me about that.
Fake space race.
More times than I needed.
Dear Ken, please stop talking about Apple TV. So we went to this family reunion. Again, everybody tests negative. Everybody's all together.
And wait a minute.
Last day of the trip.
Wait a minute.
Last day of the trip. Somebody gets a sniffle and a tickle.
And this is down on the Oregon coast. And yeah, you're with, you know, when you said family reunion, I was like, oh, isn't that sweet? Like mom, dad, the kids. But you.
That would just be a family dinner. Mom, dad, and the kids is not a family reunion.
But you had 20 people all staying in one house.
All my siblings came.
Wow. Yeah.
So really no way to predict that anybody could have got COVID.
And was you, not to give too much away, not to indicate to futurelings that you and I talk offline, but you actually texted me a picture of your brother wearing an Omnibus t-shirt. Is that true?
Yeah, why did he have that?
Is that true?
Did you notice what he had over it?
No.
A Merge Records hoodie. A Merge Records
hoodie. Merge Records hoodie.
Yeah.
He sounds like a great guy. Why have I not met your brother?
I think you might have met my brother at a Bumbershoot thing.
Oh, right.
Honestly. You didn't recognize him because he wasn't wearing a Merge Records hoodie over an Omnibus t-shirt. I was like, Nathan, why are you wearing that? But it looks good. It's a good-looking t-shirt.
Was he wearing it to tease you, or was he wearing it in general?
To stan me, rather.
He was stanning you.
He was listening to, I guess he listened to one episode on the way to the coast, and he listened to the next episode on the way home from the coast.
And so which member of the 20 people of your family knows about your career the least? Who's the one that would be like, he's got a what? A podcast? Who's the person that was evangelized by this?
I don't know if anybody asked or cared about the show. I'm sure there were nieces and nephews who don't know or care that I have a podcast.
Yeah.
They all probably have.
I have those.
They have 10 million TikTok followers. They don't care about my little podcast.
I have those nieces and nephews too. You what?
Yeah. What's a podcast, Grandpa?
They pull one earphone slightly away from their ear. You talking to me?
Yeah. None of them were interrupting Minecraft long enough to learn about Slag or whatever was before Slag.
I'm so glad that Slag has...
I'm getting called by Spam Risk. Should I take this?
Spam it. Do
hello,
it.
Hello,
do
Mr. Risk.
Do it. Open it. Oh, answer it, and let's listen to what they say.
No, we've only had my son, Amy Mann, and Jason Finn on this show. And Jason was only on an addenda, so it doesn't even count.
So you're at a family reunion, and the last day, and this was only hours ago.
Yes, I drove straight from Oregon to your house.
And you're saying someone had a tickle and a sniffle.
And they started coughing on you. No, this was, I don't know, it was before the weekend. I guess it was like 3 or 4 days ago.
Uh-huh.
But we all got PCR tests immediately. I've been antigen testing every day. Only of the 20 people there, 4 people tested positive.
I am doing a Marge Simpson.
I'm doing a... So
Homer,
but it did seem like it made my like symptoms kind of come back from when I had COVID before. I don't have COVID, John. I antigen tested every morning, but I was really in this twilight zone of like, I can't tell what is a symptom and what isn't. And if you had this for like, my wife has had this for like 2.5 years where you're like, wait, am I sick? Do I have COVID? This is it, right? I'm finally getting COVID. Like you kind of are not sure if you have a symptom that you normally would think you had.
There were probably 4 or 5 times in the last 2.5 years where I definitely had a very unusual symptom for 24 to 48 hours, where there was no accounting for it. It wasn't an allergy, and it was not a symptom that I associated with normal colds or flus. You know, like one day just had a really terrible sore throat, but then it was gone. Another time had this strange pain in my, you know, solar plexus. Like several different times where I was like, well, this can only be COVID because I haven't, where would I have gotten anything? Where would I have gotten a cold?
But if much less solar plexus itis.
Yeah, but if you can get a thing without having any opportunity to get it, it's got to be COVID. And then, you know, the next day it's gone and I have, so it fuels this thing that I think a lot of us had, which is like, oh, maybe I had COVID back in April of 2020. And
everybody wants to get it first.
Yeah.
I'm sure I had it.
In the early?
No, but people are always saying that.
Oh, I'm sure I had it. Yeah. And I'm not sure I had it.
I'm pretty sure I didn't have it.
Yeah, that's me too.
But like, and but I, you
weird
know,
symptoms.
But and I had, you know, I haven't tested positive for COVID in 3 weeks or something. But still, every day I'm like, wait, is that? Would I have gotten that tired? I was leaning on a suitcase today to zip it up, and I was a little bit like huffing and puffing. And I thought, would I have huff and puffed 20% less? Do I have long COVID?
I mean, you're getting closer and closer to 50.
Right. And it's indistinguishable.
When you turn 50, you get tired just going pee. So, I mean, you know, spoiler alert for those of you who are 49.
And feel energized when you pee.
That's right.
That's all going to turn on a dime.
When you're in your 40s, you're like, I love to pee. And then you're 51 and you're like, oh.
That happened to me much younger where just the amazing endorphin rush of just, you know, knocking out the back of the urinal kind of went away.
Oh, you've lost it already.
It's not even a hydraulic pressure issue. Really, just more of a, this is not really a bright spot of my day anymore. No,
it's not as fun as it once was.
This is just like a necessity.
Yeah, I'm afraid that just keeps getting worse. And I think it is.
What am I going to replace peeing with?
It's as close to long COVID, right? As there is a thing. I think.
Yeah, long COVID is just, aging is just the longest COVID. 30 years of like, wait, what is this new thing? Why does my back hurt?
What I replaced fun peeing with was fitful sleeping.
Mm.
That was my trade-off.
We call it polyphasic sleep on the omnibus.
So what are the chances? Let's just spitball here. What are the chances that you had your COVID times? You went out walking the dog, just spreading COVID to all the local rabbits.
All the neighbors that
then
I could.
Then you got over it. Then you immediately went to Oregon and within a week got a second COVID.
I was thinking, I'm going to be like on the cover of National Geographic, the only guy that got Omicron twice in 2.5 weeks. My whole family tested negative, but I thought.
Yeah, this whole tested negative thing, earlier on in this story, you were like, yeah, everybody tested negative, but we all gave each other COVID.
You test negative until you test positive, basically. Yeah, I think it's more common with Omicron that, like, you know, you get symptoms and then like it takes a couple days to get a negative test.
But you're over there with a top hat and a cane going, but I tested negative.
Yeah, but my exposure was like 5 days ago. So
riddle me this, because early on in the COVID years, we thought that if you got it once, then somehow you were
those were the days
bulletproof.
I think it was
forever
true of OG COVID.
And that's not true anymore. You can just get it. And
amazing
get
immune
it,
escape, apparently.
Get it and get it.
Like
and get
BA4 it. And 5 are super good at reinfecting people. Yeah. I don't know if you can get reinfected with the same one twice that easily. I'm sure I'm, I think I'm probably
Yeah, but you had
good.
Idaho / Peru COVID before.
I had Coos COVID.
Now you have Utah, Oregon COVID.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are those different variants?
I don't know. I'm not an immunologist. I'm just a guy sitting across from another guy not wanting to get
getting
COVID.
Breathed on. I am as bulletproof as you can get. I have the best thing, which is a positive test 3 weeks ago.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a positive mental attitude.
And a positive mental attitude.
And you have good nutrition.
Right.
I believe clean living
and a will to win. But I do, but for the last couple of weeks, I have had this thing where like I literally can't tell what symptoms I have. And long COVID's very tricky anyway. There have been years of discussion about to what level it's psychosomatic, and a lot of doctors were dismissing patients.
Isn't this like the Lyme disease thing where
or chronic fatigue, Epstein-Barr.
People are like, oh, it doesn't exist.
There's all these syndromes where there's such a weird cluster of symptoms that it becomes very, you know, you never identify the agent. It seems that long COVID is indubitably real.
Indubitably.
This is the new thing we're going to say now.
I love it.
You're saying undoubtedly over
indubitably.
There. Indubitably. You're saying undoubtedly over there like it's 2021.
I'm not going to say it anymore. I'm going to say indubitably.
In 2022, we say indubitably. Kendrick's going to start saying it. The CDC estimates that roughly 30% of people who get COVID are still having symptoms, whatever they define, six weeks later.
30%?
I know, right? And 85 million Americans have been confirmed as having COVID. If you broaden it to, you know, who's got antigens and blood tests or whatever, it's probably more like 200 million.
That's two-thirds of the country.
30% of 200 million means what? One in five Americans right now theoretically has long COVID. And it's a spectrum. It could be everything from I get a little tired or easily, or my breathing's not great, all the way to I have blood clots, kidney failures, heart attacks, diabetes. I mean, it could be, it seems to be like it could be everything. Somehow it attacks every bodily system at once. But in theory, this could be what some epidemiologists and public health experts are calling a mass disabling event. Suddenly, you know, a quarter of the country has this new syndrome that's going to dog them and affect their medical outcomes and health outcomes, wellness outcomes for the rest of their life.
I read an article about this recently that it was that China's continued like super lockdown policy is really implemented with this idea in mind.
That you don't want to keep getting it, right?
Well, no, that this is actually like a contest of nation states.
Oh.
And that long COVID, that the Chinese are conscious or very aware of long COVID as a thing. And they're saying this is going to make
the next superpower will be the country that doesn't get long COVID.
Yeah, exactly. That it will decrease American power over the next 50 years.
It's like we're playing some weird Slovenian board game where we're all trying to amass resources, but it turns out at the end somebody's going to be like, "Nope, I had the shortest COVID card."
That's right.
That's 15 bonus points. That puts my civilization over the top. The rest of you get washed into the sea.
It's so hard these days, as someone who has largely not fallen for conspiracies. You know, our lives have been, remember when we were young and there were only four conspiracies? Now there are 400 conspiracies.
And new ones every day.
New ones every day. And this one, like Chinese are playing the long game, waiting for our civilization to slowly run out of breath.
I don't think it's going to be that slow. Like if I was just like a Chinese a party member with access to CNN, I would be like, things are looking very good for us, comrades. Like it's getting rough over there.
Everybody stay home.
Not just COVID, but yes, among other things, COVID. I was reading this Atlantic piece on how if this really is a mass disabling event, you'd think you'd start to see in leading indicators now. Disability claims would start to tick up. There's like a monthly National Institute of Health survey that, you know, asks people, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you feeling? How's your sleeping? How's your whatever? Could you run it? You know, how's your endurance? Blah, blah, blah.
I want to take this test. I'm going to give 0 stars to a lot of those questions.
Oh, yeah? Well, then you don't get President Kennedy's little certificate.
How's your peeing? 0 stars.
Not as pleasurable as in my 20s.
How's your sleeping? 0 stars.
President Biden. Basically, there's been no uptick in either of these indicators. Oh. So now we're faced with, there's been a slight indicator in, I guess, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics for unemployment purposes. Asks people, hey, are you well enough to go to work? And that has ticked up slightly from 7.5% of people saying, no, I'm not well enough to go to work, all the way up to 8%.
Shirkers.
Over the last year. Yeah. These lazy losers.
So wait a minute. Who's talking about long COVID as this disabling illness culture-wide if no one is reporting feeling sick?
Well, individuals are certainly reporting it in enough numbers that healthcare providers can see it. Hospitals can see it. It's just that if it's going to be the societal wide thing, Are these indicators just lagging, or is it less severe than we think? The degree to which these symptoms are kind of psychosomatic, you have to report things like just how malaise-y I'm feeling, how achy I'm feeling, how good my breathing generally is.
What if you have an achy, breaky heart? Whew. Does that count?
Yeah, COVID can affect the circulatory system. Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
We need to protect Billy Cyrus at all costs.
Yes.
We need a China-style lockdown in Nashville only.
I've said that for years.
And only to protect Billy Ray Cyrus. I'm one of these... My hot take is that Dolly Parton can take care of herself.
Dolly is going to survive.
Yeah, exactly. All these people are like, we must protect Dolly Parton. No, she's fine.
Also, I don't know if she's in Nashville anymore.
I don't even know if she's up in Pigeon Forge riding her own roller coasters.
I think she is. We watched 9 to 5 2 days ago.
Is that 9 to 3 then?
Nope. No.
Is it 7 to 3?
No. Nor is it 25, nor 6 to 4. Let me just recommend to our listeners that you watch the movie, the hit comedy.
One of the biggest hit movies of 1982.
1980. And if you look at
that movie's older than I thought.
If you look at the fashion in 9 to 5, it will astonish you. There's a lot of fashion in that movie.
How much of it is on Dabney Coleman? Style. How much of it is wide ties, that's wide silk thing. Ties on that's Mr.
the thing.
Coleman?
It's not, you want to think like, oh, 1970s, it's going to be gross. But actually, the style is all like really killer. Dabney Coleman looks amazing. But all of the women's outfits are... This was the era of the knee-length skirt and the professional pumps. And, oh, boy, just winners from one scene to the next. You're like, give me a break. That blouse, it's killing me.
Well, I mean, it's impossible to make Jane Fonda or Lily Tomlin or Dolly Parton look bad. They're going to look great.
I think if the movie had been made in 1986, everybody would have looked terrible.
Because they'd all have Melanie Griffith shoulder pads?
Melanie Griffith shoulder pads, exactly. No. This was... Stop listening to Omnibus right now and go watch 9 to 5 and then come back and listen to the rest of the show.
How has nobody remade 9 to 5?
Oh, wow.
Right?
They could totally ruin it by remaking it.
Yes, but it would be a young, fun Latina cast.
Yeah, it would be kind of like redoing The Parent Trap.
I'm amazed that there's no 21st century.
Why don't we use your Hollywood connections and pitch that film? What they need is 9 to 5 remade by two middle-aged white guys.
Here's our high concept. 9 to 5, but we make it now.
Wait, 9 to 5, but the boss is a woman and the employees are men.
No, this is not the time for that movie, John. Is that some Kurt Cameron, Dean Cain joint you're working on?
Yeah. It's like it's going to come out on the Tyler Durden Network.
I mean, that movie is basically Horrible Bosses. I guess we could say that 9 to 5 has been remade. With Jennifer Aniston as Dabney Coleman.
Never saw Horrible
Jennifer Bosses. Aniston should remake all of Dabney Coleman's roles. Jennifer Aniston in War Games.
I love it.
Jennifer Aniston in Cloak and Dagger.
Love it. I'm signing off on all of these. But I'm a Jennifer Aniston fan. I'm not going to ever say I'm a Jennifer Aniston stan. That's a thing I'm not going to adopt.
You don't Staniston?
I don't stan.
Staniston?
Staniston.
So I've been having these, you know, symptoms where I wonder if I have symptoms, and it's caused me to ponder much on the connection between mind and body.
Did you have these before? I mean, because you're in excellent health, you probably never go, huh, maybe I have congestive heart failure.
No, but once a week during COVID, I have at the going to bed at night been like, I often get like, when I get a cold, I get the symptoms first at night.
Yeah.
And so pretty much once a week, I will go to bed thinking, that's it. Something in the back of my sinuses. I can sense it.
But
I'm going to wake up with a cold and it's going to be full-blown COVID.
You're not someone who goes, I think I have brain cancer.
Like, I'm not a hypochondriac. Okay. I'm not scrolling through WebMD wondering what... Because I'm just... it's probably because nothing catastrophic has ever happened to my health.
Right.
So I just assume, oh, I'm going to be in great shape forever. I'm immortal, basically.
God smiles upon you. Right? When you look up at the sun, it's a laughing baby.
That's right. It's a laughing baby who says, Ken, you will never age or get sick. Neither wilt thou wither. No withering, says the baby.
Yes.
And our subject for the show, now that we're an hour and a half into it.
Yes.
It concerns this connection between mind and body, between attitude and wellness.
A connection?
A connection, if you will. A conjunction in our connective tissue between... mind and body. When you read about what's commonly called the placebo effect, What's your experience reading about the placebo effect? Do you remember the age when you suddenly had somebody tell you, do you know if you just take a fake pill,
sugar pill,
it'll relieve your symptoms just as well? And you were like, what? Everything I thought I knew about science-based medicine is a lie.
We talk about it around here a lot because one of the members of my household is currently involved in a clinical trial. And so she is taking daily medicaments.
Without knowing if they're inert or ERT.
Right. But she is complaining of experiencing symptoms that are affecting the quality of her daily life.
Which she takes to be side effects of the drug should it be the non-placebo.
It seems very unlikely that they would give you a placebo that intentionally gave you bad feelings, illness, in order just to monkey with your head.
It's a sugar pill, but we put in a teensy amount of arsenic.
But the concept of placebo, you know, it is entirely possible that she's taking a sugar pill every day.
Is she aware of the concept of the nocebo effect?
I don't know. Is it like a no-see-em? Because I've been bitten by them. They suck. You can't even see them.
It's like the placebo effect, but you're wearing a Japanese mask.
Oh. We do have some Japanese masks around here, but not in a cultural appropriation way.
No.
We celebrate diversity.
It's to salute Rami Malek in the latest James Bond movie.
Ugh. God, that was a terrible role. He was really underused.
I don't understand how he could have been... isn't it that he has some 20-year backstory with Bond? And isn't Rami Malek like 33?
Yeah.
I don't understand how that works.
No, I don't either. The motivation of that character throughout was not... was garbled.
I think everyone knew going into this entry that we were going to complain about the villain in No Time to Die, and now we have, and we can move on.
Okay. Ken, you know I'm a writer.
Yes, you love making content. The world doesn't have enough, and you're like, here's the fire hose. Here comes some content.
The thing is, I make a lot of content, but I don't put it in the fire hose because I want a more integrated community, and I don't know where to find it.
Are you saying you would like some kind of fully integrated commenting system that allows for threaded comments and replies and likes, like you have your very own little social media platform for your content?
That's exactly what I want to do. And I want it optimized for mobile. I want my content to adjust so my site looks great on any device, but I'm at a loss.
You, John, need the powerful blogging tools of Squarespace. It's easy with Squarespace to set up a website that does all that. Categorize, share, and schedule your posts. You can cross-post so you put something up once and it knows how to send it in the right format to Twitter or Tumblr or Facebook, whatever you want. Everything optimized and tagged and ready to go. Squarespace sounds great.
It does. Well, I'm so excited. You know, this is exactly what I've been looking for. So what do I do?
John, I want you right now to head to squarespace.com/omnibus. Stop whatever you're doing. Go to squarespace.com/omnibus and start your free trial. And when you're ready to launch, then you just use offer code omnibus and you're going to save not 2, not 5, but 10% off your first purchase of a Squarespace website or domain.
Well, thank you to Squarespace for supporting Omnibus and the Omnibus Project. Help us by helping yourself. Go to squarespace.com/omnibus and put in the offer code Omnibus to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
The nocebo effect is kind of the inverse of the placebo effect, whereby if you are given a drug and you know what the side effects are claimed to be, you will experience the ill side effects, even if you are getting the sugar pill.
Oh, you'll.
The placebo effect is not a guaranteed positive.
Right, I see. It's not just that you'll be like, I'm cured.
Could your family member have known what the potential side effects of the?
I don't think so, because if you read a list of potential side effects, they're all the same: dizziness, nausea. Potential heart attack.
Every drug has all these.
Might cause death. Yeah, there's 40 different possibilities that every time you take an aspirin. So I don't think you could zoom in unless you did a lot of online research of like, what's the worst that people feel?
I remember as a kid just getting my brain blown by the idea that non-medicines work as well in some cases as medicines, which is how the placebo effect was described to me.
And isn't it why... voodoo works and why, I mean, it's like,
that's your explanation for, okay, it's nothing to talk about. John's solved it, and it's just the same as voodoo. So,
but you know,
there are Haitian Loa who are changing your neuroendocrine system.
New age medicine, or really
any kind of alternative.
Basically, any medicine in Germany that doesn't involve like open heart surgery. It's just about giving you like
vibes,
right?
Why would you want
healing vibes?
Why would you want surgery? Why would you want arthroscopic? I tried to say arthroscopic and it didn't happen for me.
You just said it though. Good job. All you had to do was not think about your stutter.
Okay. I am not thinking about my knee or getting surgery on it. Here we go. All. Why would you want arthroscopic surgery on your knee when you could just give your knee better vibes?
I mean, it's Christian Science. You've just broken it down.
Turn on some The Weeknd.
You're talking about the musician?
Yes.
Or turn on...
Yeah, or turn on the concept of the weekend in your mind. Put on a shirt that says TGIF. I remember over the years, my experience with the placebo effect is mostly reading kind of brain-boggling pop science headlines about the unlikely, improbable degree of specificity to which the placebo effect can influence people. You know, the color of the pill you take apparently affects the level of the placebo response.
What's the hot color?
Well, it depends on what you want. It turns out to sleep aids, blue. Blue convinces people they're getting a good sleep aid.
When you said sleep aid, I saw a blue pill.
Anxiety. What do you want for anxiety?
Yellow.
Close. Green.
Green.
Green is what chills people out.
Green's pretty chill.
And all these are better than white, by the way. If you give somebody a white pill and say, this might be the real pill or not, they will have less of a positive effect than somebody who's given a colored pill and said, this might be the real pill or not.
You're more likely to think a colored pill is real, you're saying.
Yes. The size of the pill, a larger pill, appears to increase the body's placebo response.
Oh. Why would they give me all this pill? Right.
This must be good.
Yeah, it's got full of stuff.
Look at this. It's the size of a ping pong ball. Or if you get more of a dosage, like somebody who takes four pills, is told to take four pills, will experience a better placebo response than somebody taking two.
That makes sense to me.
There's even something called the honest placebo effect, which is an attempt to get around some of the ethical issues with giving placebos.
Sick people sugar pills?
You'll be fine. We can't tell you.
It seems kind of sucky.
This might work, but there's a 50-50 chance that you're getting the bad stuff.
We've got 50 people in this trial, and half of them are going to die.
to this day, there's no widespread medical consensus on best ethical practices for placebos. It's not clear. You know, I think the general consensus is you can't give a placebo for any illness where there is a known treatment, because then you're depriving somebody of a good established treatment.
Right.
So you can really only use a placebo for things that are kind of untreatable.
Well, what's interesting about the clinical trial that's going on in this house.
In this very house.
Or I'm sorry, above the bunker, in the house that resides above the bunker, secreting us
probably about
from satellites.
6 to 8 feet above your head right now.
Is
a control group or not?
In researching the drug, we realized that the drug is just
You're not supposed to research the drug.
Well,
it's like being on a jury.
It's me. I can't not research things. I was like, well, tell me the thing. And then I'm like, well, what about this? This is the sound of me researching.
This is the sound of you messing with science. Science is going downhill from your tack, tack, tack.
So then I realized, it's a compound. It's a compound drugs that we can get over the counter and combine with our own mortar and pestle.
You could start doing your own control group with pets.
So it seemed like, this is the late stage trial. So there's a lot of suggestion that this drug is going to be, is going to have efficacy.
Unless something goes wrong here, this is going on the market.
It's indubitable. And so why would we mess around with this clinical trial on behalf of some other people when we could just, you know, I could just grind this stuff up and we make it here at home. We'll snort it before every meal. And then
you could even make your own placebos.
We sat on the couch and we had a long talk and we realized that the work here is to help others, that you participate in a trial in order to serve the greater good.
It's the opposite of my impulse being like, if I have COVID, I really don't want to be in the global South. I'm going to put on a 95 and get on a
plane. It's kind of the opposite of that. But, you know, around here, we often do things for the greater good. It's part of, you know, being...
You often think
liberals.
You often think, what would Ken do? And then you're like, ah, that's sociopathy. Let me do the opposite.
But what's nice about it is that after the clinical trial is over, we don't have to then wait for the whole study to, you know, for the drug to finally be approved by the FDA and all that baloney. We can just immediately go back to my whole hammer and and I've been making it in the garage this whole time. So we've got a stockpile. Yeah.
The nocebo effect is so pronounced. The fact that these side effects, like your family member thinks she might be experiencing.
I never specified her gender.
You never specified her gender? Just her pronouns. I'm just wondering what male family members you now have around here. Am I finally going to meet
Ruprecht?
What was the guy's name on My Three Sons? Uncle Freddy or whatever? Yeah. There was a study of erectile dysfunction where there was a study of a drug where the patients were told, hey, erectile dysfunction.
Finally, we get to erectile dysfunction.
Might be the side effect. The real goal of all pharmaceutical research, the holy grail. After we cure cancer, we're still going to be like boners.
How are we two guys all on either side of the age of 50 and we've never talked about erectile dysfunction once in 5 years of doing this show?
Or off the air, I don't believe.
It has never come up.
Well, then you might need a pill if it's never come up.
Oh, where's my belt?
Everybody listening was saying that in their head. So if I didn't say it, they'd be angry.
I get so many angry letters from people saying, why don't you acknowledge Ken's jokes? I do. I hear about it all the time. There are whole threads on the internet like, Ken made this joke and John didn't acknowledge it. Do you think that he was trying
to... They think you don't get it.
There are those people, the like, John didn't get it. And then there are the people that are like, I think John is negging Ken by not acknowledging his puns.
What about Occam's Razor, which is the joke was indeed not funny? Like, what's the most parsimonious explanation here? Ken told an unfunny joke and John didn't laugh. I can't believe it.
I keep trying to wade in and say... I do not acknowledge puns. I don't acknowledge them, Sam I am. I don't acknowledge them on a boat. I do not acknowledge them in a coat.
Having been told that these people, you might get erectile dysfunction, 15% of people only 15% of people who were not told that was a possible side effect experienced erectile dysfunction. Just by being told that it could happen, the 44% of people on the sugar pill started to have problems.
I feel like probably 60% of the people in the study were having erectile dysfunction.
No,
they just didn't want to acknowledge it. And then they were like, wait a minute.
Do you think they just subtracted women here? They should.
Oh, you know what it is? I bet that the people that claimed to be having it were just trying to get out of sex with their wife. They're like, sorry, honey.
Erectile dysfunction doesn't exist.
Sorry, I don't have, I can't. I would.
There is even a case of someone taking 26 of his placebo pills and trying to commit suicide with them.
Can you commit suicide by not getting erections? You get so little of an erection that it kills you?
This is a bummer. You jump off a bridge. No, this is a different test with a different drug. It's an attempt at suicide with sugar pills. His blood pressure got dangerously low. You don't remember who we were talking about. The guy that took 26 boner pills.
Oh, yeah. But these were fake. These were sugar pills?
Yeah. He took 26 of his placebos, thinking I'll end it all. And his blood pressure got super low, and doctors were worried. And then they were like, actually, we've checked, and these are inactive. You didn't take anything. In which case,
his blood pressure immediately
rebounded. And from headlines like these, you kind of get the idea there's something magical about not just the placebo effect, but the mind, that we have an amazing amount of control over the wellness of our bodies through some kind of mystical, unexplained means.
So let me ask you, in my own family, the legend is that my grandmother, my father sold her house while she was living in it. With the and part of the contract was that she could live there as long as she could live there the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But that at a certain point, my grandmother looked around and realized that she was no longer needed. And according to my mom, went from being perfectly healthy to dead in 10 days. She sat down, and didn't get back up. And according to my mom, willed herself to pass.
People kind of deciding to let go, I think, is a known. You can see it just actuarially looking by looking at people's survival in the calendar year. People are pretty good at surviving until a birthday. And then there's a big statistical bump in who dies after.
Or just like having the day passed after the Christmas or something.
Yeah, having whatever the thing they were looking forward
to. St. Patrick's Day, I bet, is a big one.
Or the people who die very soon after a beloved spouse.
So if you can do something that extreme, can't you also use your mind to... Isn't hell? I mean, I don't want to sound like a German naturopath, but
why are you always giving the Germans for this?
Because God, Ken, I have bad allergies,
and homeopathy doesn't work.
It doesn't. I need pseudoephedrine to clear my sinuses. And when you go to Europe, you go into a pharmacist, and they're like, pseudoephedrine. That's as bad as heroin, but we will give you.
You need echinacea.
Yeah, this tincture of made up, you know, ground up tree leaves, and it doesn't work, and I'm mad at them.
I mean, there's certainly a lot of overlap today between practitioners of natural or alternative medicines and
the sugar pill industry
and research. Yeah, the big sugar. Like, people just are eating healthier today. So what are they going to do with all that sugar?
CNH.
You have to put it in
pure
little
cane sugar. You'll cure anything.
So the effects of lots of these alternative medicines that, you know, have centuries or millennia of apparently successful practice, acupuncture and so forth, could possibly be chalked up to a placebo effect.
Have you had acupuncture?
The patient thinks they're going to work, not on purpose.
Well, you had accidental acupuncture?
I was just playing with a cactus in Huntington Gardens.
This sounds like something where you were in a first class seat and
was I supposed to find my meridians or think about chi or something?
I don't know. I had acupuncture one time and it was profound.
But it was not a control group. You knew somebody was. You knew a wise man was sticking needles into you.
It was a young woman, but she did seem very wise, and I knew it was happening.
I don't need to know about your social life.
I knew it was happening. Yes, I was there.
It's not a double blind test, then.
But it was like it was.
We need
like,
to roofie you and then acupuncture you and see what happens.
Whack-a-doodle is what it was.
So you felt better in your back, knee, groin, whatever it was.
No, I'm not going to say that I felt better, but I went on a journey.
It was terrible. It was a terrible journey. It was like getting COVID in Peru.
It was super wild. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't, you know, I went in there because my neck hurt and I came out and I could, for 3 days, I could see around corner.
The idea that the layperson may have about the placebo effect, which is that the body has magical abilities to cure just about everything, tends to be a misconception.
Okay.
The word placebo goes back to the 4th century when St. Jerome, in his Latin translation of the Bible, got to the 114th Psalm. And as you know, John, Psalm 114, verse 9 reads,
beyond this place of wrath and fears looms the horror of the shade.
That's a loose translation. Yeah, more or less. St. Jerome wrote, placebo domino in regione vivorum. I will please God in the land of the living. So it's pretty close to what you were saying.
Yeah.
The land of living, being the opposite of the land of ice and snow or whatever it was you said. Placebo being Latin for I will please.
Oh, I will please.
That line became, that verse from the Psalms became commonly used in liturgical chants, like in the Vespers chant, which means it was used in funerals. And in medieval times, because of the word placebo's appearance in Latin funeral chants, the word became used for, and I love that this is a thing, in the Middle Ages, people who would crash a funeral just to get the refreshments.
This was a thing even back then?
Yes, there were wedding crashers.
Wow.
Because there would be a big feast. A feast was customary at a funeral.
Sure.
And so a lot of people would show up and you wouldn't be like, oh, how did you know the deceased, or how did you know the bereaved family?
Right.
A lot of people would just show up and be like, I'll have some more lamb chops, please. And so because of that, a placebo became used for this kind of a gate crasher. And Chaucer wrote about them in Canterbury's Tale. He says, flatterers are the devil's chaplains, always singing placebo, you know, because the idea is that they would be,
I will please.
Yes. And I think maybe because of the association with you know, singing the funeral march or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, they're kiss ups. They're sycophants. A placebo was a people pleaser or a, and with the overtones of being a deceiver because they've snuck into the feast. In one of, in another of the Canterbury Tales, Merchant's Tale, there's a character named Placebo who is a bit of a sycophant and tells the protagonist exactly what he wants to hear.
I love that you're saying sycophant.
Sycophant? Sycophant.
Sycophant is what I would say, but sycophant is a Kenism.
I don't want to say sick in a show about the placebo effect. Both are correct, although Webster's does prefer... Oh, actually, Webster's prefers sycophant, sycophant, also sycophant, also either with fant. So I
sycophant.
I picked the least Webster's approved solution on every axis.
It's a rare pronunciation, but we'll allow it.
It's an old code, but it checks out.
So
I guess the question is whether you want sick to be in it accidentally or psycho to be in it accidentally.
That's what struck me. Because I wouldn't think
it's psycho. It sounds like I'm saying psychophant.
It does. Yeah,
I see what you're saying with a P, silent P.
So is that where placebo was popularized in Chaucer?
Yeah, I think Chaucer is the first poetic use of it. You know, because he's the one that says they're always singing "I will please, I will please," but it becomes used in. Apparently, it entered the medical literature quite early, mid-18th century. There's a Scottish obstetrician named William Smellie.
Huh, sure.
Okay. Wow.
Go on.
Just going to my OBGYN, Dr. Smellie. He wrote about some medical procedure. It will be convenient to prescribe some innocent placemus. And it's got a different ending, but it's still a Latin conjugation of the same verb to please.
And was he doing this like as a kind of, this guy is a hypochondriac, get him out of here, give him a fake pill and get him out?
I mean, nothing here says it's fake, but he does say it's innocent. Like, yeah, I think that it is kind of like, you know, just let's just give him something harmless, you know, take two of these and call me in the morning.
Because that's the other use of placebo that we see in popular culture is this person's a hypochondriac, they're crazy, tell them that this is a powerful drug and they can
Doctors should not be doing that.
This is the cartoon version.
Right. But it's completely unethical. Like a physician, I think, would regard it as an ethical lapse to be like, this will be great. I mean, maybe he can give you like a vitamin supplement and then feel like, well, I didn't lie to the guy. He may oversell the benefits.
I see.
But you shouldn't give somebody something inert and be like, this is it. Like you'll feel better in a week. It's thought that harnessing the placebo response in that way is
unethical
to the patient. You're deceiving the patient about his or her own, about their own treatment course. And they should have agency over that, I guess. But the idea that you could use a duplicate inactive treatment to test the efficacy of something begins not too long after Dr. Smellie's time. The late 18th century was a real time of quackery. Lots of people showing up in royal courts and being like, check it out. You just need to chew on this, or you just need to, put this up your butt. And, you know, people would say,
depending on who you know in Seattle, that's still the truth.
Yeah. Yes, please. the first case I could find of somebody using a placebo in a medical trial happened in 1784 with that famous historical team up of Louis XVI and Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, I loved it when those two got together.
Sparks would fly.
Song and dance.
They'd solve crimes. Franklin was at the time the American ambassador to the French court. Louis XVI's wife, Marie Antoinette, had been quite taken by the wooings and the seducings of Dr. Mesmer.
Oh, yeah.
Franz Mesmer, kind of a self-styled doctor who told people that he had a magical healing fluid.
He mesmerized them.
The source of our word, mesmerize. And I guess he had a variety of different kinds of treatments that he had pioneered. In one case, he would just have people hold a magnetized tree. And this does raise the question, first of all,
how do you magnetize a tree?
How would one magnetize a tree? And I don't think Dr. Mesmer was actually too concerned with the nuts and bolts of this. But he would tell people, hey, go hug this mesmerized tree, and their symptoms would go away. And Louis XVI thought Marie Antoinette was being taken for a ride, and, you know, he was just paying this guy for nothing.
Because Mesmer was like, some diseases can only be relieved by spanking and tickling.
That's what, to this day in France, like the Germans love weird homeopathy. And in France, they just want to tickle you with a feather duster.
That's right.
In your undercarriage. It cures everything, even headaches. So under the supervision of Ben Franklin, who was a respected scientist, King Louis assembled some of his greatest minds of his court, Antoine Lavoisier, Dr. Guillotin, who ironically...
We hear about later.
It turns out Louis XVI maybe should not have encouraged the medical work of Dr. Guillotin. It turned out there were some downsides to that for him. So what they did was they thought, well, we'll just tell this guy we magnetized some trees and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, on the unmagnetized trees, all the patients were like, no, Dr. Mesmer's right. My rheumatism is gone.
There you go.
And King Louis was like, hey, guess what? I just invented placebos. Shortly thereafter, in 1799, I had never heard of this. An American doctor named Elisha Perkins had invented a method that he called metallic tractors, whereby it was, I think it was the first patent, is this right? The first patent ever granted under the American Constitution. Like the first patent in American history is like, hold on to these metal rods and it'll draw the sickly fluid out of your humors.
How have we not done an omnibus on this?
On Elisha Perkins and his metallic tractors? Apparently it was a huge sensation. Everybody thought it was a panacea for everything. That's redundant. George Washington owned a set of metallic tractors.
Were they just like joysticks that you hung on to and it would draw the black bile out of you?
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar to a magnetized tree, but it's smaller. Like when you're on vacation, you can't just magnetize a tree or bring a magnetized tree.
Right.
You need something that can fit in your carry-on. So these were metal rods you would hold. And they made it their way across the Atlantic. And then as now, well, you'd think that the Yankee Sharps of New England would have complained, but it took
Louis the 16th.
It took the British to say, what is this American hayseedery?
Yes.
A Dr. Haygarth of Bath decided, here's what I'll do. I'll paint some wooden dowels with metallic paint. And I'll get some people to hold the real metallic tractors that I bought from Dr. Perkins himself, and I'll get some people to hold these wooden dowels, and we'll see who reports a health improvement. He was surprised. This goes beyond what Louis XVI discovered. He was surprised to find not just that he was able to fool someone, but they both worked equally well. That the wooden and the metallic tractors. The patients reported the same benefit, and he thought,
does that not potentially prove that wood is also a metallic tractor?
Well, apparently it can be magnetized in tree form.
Tractor?
If you believe Dr. Mesmer, he ascribes it to faith. He thought, it's we all know the amazing powers of faith in the Christian God. Apparently it has healing powers in this case as well. The patient believed that God could heal them, and thus it did.
Wait, when did God enter into it?
Well, what else could you have faith in?
Magnetism.
Oh, right. Maybe that's what he meant. A belief in the amazing power of magnets.
Yes.
How do they work? The modern study of placebos, we're going to jump like ahead 150 years. That's the explosion of...
us landing 100 years later.
Dr. Henry Beecher writes a landmark work called The Powerful Placebo. In the common...
Is this from Beecher's cheese?
No.
Unrelated. Beecher's shampoo?
Is that a shampoo?
I'm not sure. I'm just throwing...
Yes, that one's true then.
Okay.
Yes, he invented Beecher's shampoo. The common folklore about him is that he had been a medic during World War II. In some cases, some versions, Anzio, and some versions, Normandy, and some versions, the Pacific.
That seems like something you could check out.
This can be checked, and we will do so in a minute.
Oh, okay.
But when Dr. Beecher's placebo research is mentioned, it's almost always claimed that it began in World War II, where during a shortage of morphine, he had to put some patients on a saline drip and was still able to perform medical procedures and surgeries on them.
Oh, okay.
Without them experiencing pain.
I think I've read about this.
There's a MASH episode about it, which might be what you're thinking of.
That is what I'm thinking
of. And I think that's what most people think of, because the story about Dr. Beecher turns out to be totally untrue. They are thinking of Colonel Potter.
Is that right?
There are some scattered mentions of this story in the late 60s, which would predate the season 6 finale of MASH, in which Colonel Potter runs out of morphine and gives everybody saline drip and it magically works to Winchester's shock. However, we talk about MASH more than you'd think on this podcast. But most of the mentions of Beecher having done this wartime experiment actually post-date MASH, which makes me think this is what cemented it in the public consciousness.
Right.
Because Potter reports it as a thing that happened during World War I and II that medics all know about.
Is there any evidence that medics did this or knew about it?
Beecher did something similar, which I think got blown out of proportion. He was a battlefield medic who reported that a third of the time when he offered morphine to his wounded patients, they would not take it. And he had noticed that in private civilian practice, people were desperate to avoid pain, that they would plead for pain relief. And he thought, this is something about the state of mind on a battlefield. These men are no longer afraid of pain. Things are already about as bad and stressful as they can get. Their mind is doing something that has the same pain fighting, that gives them the same kind of pain resistance that you would expect from an analgesic.
You know, it's such a different experience to be like pre-pain. I'm going to cut into you.
I know.
And so do you want medicine? Yes, I do. As opposed to like, how much worse can I feel than this hot bullet in my abdomen? Like, it's not going to be worse for you to take it out.
And I wonder if that distinction is greater than the power of the mind that Beecher ascribed. Because he found that, you know, when he did research, basically his is the root of all 20th century findings about placebo. This idea we have that the body has a mysterious and powerful way to cure just about anything if you can only unleash it.
So Beecher was real and also a scientist?
Yeah, Beecher published The Powerful Placebo after the war. It's just that the story of him treating wound injury victims with saline was not true.
I see.
But he was a World War II medic who became interested in the power of the mind. He seems to have oversold?
Yeah, oversold. He oversold it.
He oversold it. He put too many cells
indubitably
in it. In the 90s, his work has been reassessed. And
it was discovered to be incompatible with Marxism.
It was discovered that he had avoided many of the intervening factors that can appear to make... basically, that there are lots of other things that can lead to recovery when you're given an inactive drug besides belief.
Such as?
The most important would be regression to the mean. Basically, somebody who has very severe symptoms is more likely to go back to their baseline than they are to get more severe symptoms. So if you're doing a test of people who have a specific ailment in some acute form, the most likely outcome is that all of them, whether they get the good stuff or not, are going to get better. And
unless they die.
Yeah, that's a way of getting better.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then they're
Your pain goes away.
Then they're with God or Vishnu or whoever. And Beecher really did not account statistically for how much of the placebo bump would just come from, look, everybody's getting better. There's also an everybody getting better effect because lots of the diseases you check for are temporary and self-limiting. You know, somebody who's in... There are some kinds of pain that are chronic, but there are some things you would try to treat that are going to get better in a month anyway. So
when getting better and you're getting better and you're getting better.
So when he went through the literature looking for all the tests that had been done, you know, inactive sugar pill control group versus active ingredient, which I think was a pretty recent introduction then. I think, painted dowels are one thing, but the idea that you would have a double blind thing and you would give some people a fake pill so that even they wouldn't know that they weren't getting the real thing. That goes back to the late 40s and tests on like antibiotics like streptomycin, I think. It was a fairly new invention when Beecher started to consider it.
How do you control for the fact that 60% of people on both sides are just going to get better naturally?
Right. So you have to know what that number is and account for it, I guess. It depends on how good your estimate of all these factors are. And there's more than those. There's the effect that people want to be better. So when people have to self-report symptoms, they will err on the side of hope. There's also the effect that people want to please an authority figure like a doctor. So when the doctor asks them, they will try to tell him what he wants to hear. Then there's the effect on the doctor's side of he certainly wants to believe
that he is making people better.
An improvement.
Yeah.
So he's more likely to interpret results in a way that leads to a good effect. And then when it's revealed who's on the who's on the good stuff and who's not, you think, wow, even the sugar pill people were doing better. And finally, there's something called the Hawthorne effect, so named because it was discovered at the Hawthorne plant, a factory in Cicero, Illinois, that made electronics or electrical devices in the 50s. The company, in the interest of efficiency, changed a bunch of lighting. You know, they would kind of make systematic lighting changes throughout the factory and see what happened to efficiency.
Those were the great days of American capitalism where some like manager of a plant could be like, you know what?
Let's make these guys work in the dark.
I'm just going to run fine. Some experiments.
They're Irish and Italian. It doesn't really matter. In this case, the bosses were delighted to find that no matter what they did to the lighting, efficiency went up.
Oh.
The Hawthorne effect is now used to describe the phenomenon whereby people who know their behavior is being examined or studied do better and improve at things. And in a medical case, you can see why that, in a medical study, you can see why that might be the case. You know, these are the people that are getting better, closer care than people who are not in the study. They're thinking more about their symptoms. They're thinking more about their wellness. It stands to reason that these would be the ones that would show improvement compared to the mean of people who are not in a study.
This is one of the major complicating factors for me of all statistics, and in particular, like double-blind tests, all kind of science, is not this variety, but generally that the subject group is necessarily going to be small, right? You can only get 200 people to take part in your study.
It's got to be people who just had knee surgery in the last 6 months, right, and have never had asthma and are in otherwise, you know, their blood pressure is in a certain range.
Exactly. And live within 100 miles of Seattle.
And they have to sign up for the thing.
And so if you take, you're already dealing with such a small group, and then you have to factor in, well, a lot of people want to get better, and also people want to please doctors, and also there's the Hawthorne effect.
And they're going to be self-reporting their own progress every day, and
it becomes
mindful about stuff.
I mean, even studies that encompass 10,000 people, when you account for all of the variation, it just feels like there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics, and then there are medical trials.
It seems difficult to get around the Hawthorne effect because you have to get people to take a medical trial without knowing it.
Yeah, you'd have to basically find 5,000 people that were sick and didn't know it. And that didn't know they were taking pills.
I think they can know they're sick. They just can't know they're in a trial. So you have to somehow, you know, blow the medicament into a fine powder in their home heating and air conditioning system.
But even then, if they're aware there's a medicament, they want to get better.
They're not aware.
Oh, I see.
You're just sneaking outside their house and blowing it into their dryer vent.
You're putting it into their
water. And then the next day on the subway, somehow they don't notice that somebody during their commute is always like, "Hey, buddy, how you feeling?" okay, I'm good. But on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you feeling?
Yeah, just generally.
Just being friendly, you know, and, you know, a different person asks you that every day on the bus and you think nothing of it. Well, I'm not in a medical trial, but they certainly seem interested in my well-being.
In the 1980s, I talked to a lot of people that wanted to microdose an entire community. That was the big plan among the eco-warriors. They wanted to put LSD in the water supply.
Psilocybin
in Spokane and see what happened. Everybody would immediately begin hugging magnetized trees.
How many of your friends are Batman villains?
Actually, so many. I used to know a guy whose name, I swear to you, his name was Treetop. And he was like 6'10" and like a weed dealer, but also like a local legend. And we discussed putting LSD in the water a lot.
You asked how you can get around things like the Hawthorne effect. There have been a series of very rigorous studies out of Denmark, where everything is rigorous, in the 1990s,
I'll say.
Where they had the idea to just
talking about spankings.
They had wait, that's the thing that's the most rigorous in Denmark?
I'll tell you
it's
what.
It's all the flight attendants spanking you?
If you ask for a spanking in Denmark, you're going to get a rigorous one.
I was picturing the severe fixtures on doors and window latches.
Oh.
I was picturing severe Scandinavian design, not dominatrices.
I was sure you were going to make a reference to that restaurant that serves moss soup.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been there? That seems like a thing you would have done.
In Denmark?
Yeah.
Noma,
yeah.
I have not been to Noma, but I went to that one B&B on Lumi Island where the Noma chef was making his moss soups.
That's problematic now.
Yeah, do you know, were we talking about this? It turned out he was, it turned out not only was he groping all his employees, but he was also buying all the stuff at Costco and telling people it was from his herb garden.
There's a person here in this household that was born on Lummi Island. So we have, we're up to date on all the Lummi Island news.
So I've been saying Lummi like a chump. It's Lummi?
Lummi, yeah.
Lummi.
Lummi Island.
Oh man, I've been saying it wrong.
I know. Sorry, buddy. There's so many Native American names in the Northwest. It's really hard to know them all.
My brother-in-law was just up there learning their ways and their lore, and they said he was saying Lummi. He wasn't. Once again, he wasn't listening.
That's right. You have to listen.
Colonizer behavior. He just wasn't listening. In the Danish group, they were like, "Look, you don't want to have two groups: an active ingredient and an inactive ingredient. You need three groups. You need."
Uh-oh! Really?
Yes.
Tell me more.
Active ingredient, inactive ingredient that they take and are told it might be the active ingredient, and a third group that gets nothing.
Gets nothing at
nothing.
All.
You're in the study. We're not giving you a pill. Your treatment is you take nothing. You lose. Good day. And the idea is then you can see a differentiation, not just between active drug and sugar pill, but then you can see the placebo effect at work. You can see what the difference in response is. I'm taking something. I hope it works. And I'm not taking anything. It just gives you a baseline.
Well, what a drag. And hey, welcome to the study. You meet our rigorous qualifications. You get nothing.
I'm so sorry. You have stage 4 cancer. We'll be in touch.
That sucks.
They're serving an important purpose for Danish science.
There it is.
Because what you can see there is what we now, kind of what we now know about the placebo response is it's pretty good at symptoms that are self-reported by the patient. If you want to know, if you want to treat pain, if you want to treat anxiety, if you want to treat, fatigue, things like that, the placebo response is your man or woman.
We're not. It's your woman.
Yeah. The placebo effect is your woman.
Yeah.
Do you remember that Allman Brothers
Such
song?
Such a great record.
But there is no cancer. There's no placebo effect that appears to shrink tumors. It doesn't help asthmatics breathe better. The placebo effect is not, the placebo given is not always a pill. You know, often they will cut open somebody's, they'll put somebody under a general anesthesia, cut open their hip, and then only do the intervention on half the patients. So you come out of anesthetic with a big scar on your hip and you have no idea if you got operated on or not.
They put a Tamaguchi in there and it just buzzes every once in a while.
And the most common result of all these tests is that the patients feel like their asthma, diabetes, sore hip, whatever is much better. But by any objective measure, nothing has happened.
I love you said diabetes.
That's what a 85-year-old grandpa would say. I got the diabetes.
How many, is there a study, there must be, how many people do you need in any one of those three Danish groups for the results to be useful? Well, I mean, you need at least...
Denmark's very small.
I know.
Each of these groups is one person. You need to find three guys. Sven gets the good drug.
It seems like you would need 300 people in each group just to account for variation of... normal variation.
Yes. I mean, degree of, what's the term for this? Margin of error.
Margin of error.
Statistically meaning, but there's equations. There's statistical equations that will tell you this is the number of people you need for this to be statistically significant.
That's why.
I don't know how to do that work and I'm not going to walk you through it.
That's why when you call people and ask if you're going to vote Democrat or Republican, you need to call 5,000 people and. Even still, it's just people that have phones.
It's people who are home waiting to talk to somebody on their landline. Average age of respondent, 96. The magical power of the placebo response is kind of overrated, I think, in the public eye. You can't shrink a tumor with good vibes. But there is, there is something to being able to treat things like pain or anxiety or depression. I mean, I think a lot of the effect of, there are some studies that show that most of the effect of antidepressants is just the fact of taking them. More than any neurochemical effect.
What studies say that?
I know you love your bipolar stuff.
Yeah, but that's
and I'm not, and I'm not going to tell you they don't work. That'll break it.
It's not an antidepressant though. It's a different thing. Well, it's an anticonvulsant.
Even if I tell you it doesn't work, you still have the honest placebo effect. It'll still do something for you.
I know it does work.
these things do work because and we now understand the mechanism. The neuroendocrine system is a complex and beautiful thing. It's the part of your body that turns stress in your brain into stress responses in your body, you know, hormones squirting. And you know, these are the two parts of your body that, you know, your brain and your hormones, you may think of as making vastly different decisions at different times, but no, it's all,
no, they do. Ken, I'm here to tell you the two are seldom in conjunction.
It's all mediated by the brain, which means if your brain thinks, this is going to be good, it will release endorphins and things do get better. There's a pretty definitive test in 1998 where they told some patients that they had gotten a placebo, and then they gave them naloxone, which is some kind of, I think it's something you give people to get them off heroin or maybe to treat overdoses.
Yeah.
Basically, it stops the opiate receptors on the cells. And so it should have increased the pain. You know, everybody, all the patients that got a placebo reported that they were getting less pain from whatever they had been suffering. The ones, and then some of them were told, hey, actually that was a placebo. And then everybody was given the naloxone. The ones who had been told they had a placebo, their pain went back up.
Oh.
You know, and so we get, you know, you can actually see what's going on there on a cellular level, you know, that the endorphins were interfering with the pain receptors on the individual tissues, and then the naloxone came in there and wiped out what the endorphins were doing.
Naloxone is Narcan.
Oh.
It's the,
well, I didn't want to do a free ad for Narcan. They're not sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, but Narcan,
I was using the generic.
Narcan's really good, and so here's a free ad for them.
Should we record one right now?
Yeah.
Hey John, do you think our listeners are heroin addicts?
A lot of them are probably ODing right now, Ken.
Well, you know, if you type code Omnibus into Narcan's website, you'll get 10% off your first 6 ODs.
Sweet. Well, that means I can carry Narcan with me everywhere I go.
That's a good ad. That's really good.
That's Omnibus at OM. No, wait. I had an interesting effect with my bipolar medication, which is called Lamictal, which was
not an ad.
This is not an ad.
Consult your physician.
Although it's really good if you have bipolar. It was one of the things that convinced me was that the doctor told me they don't know how it works.
Mm.
The doctor was like, yeah, it just, this is one of those like lick a toad in the Amazon rainforest and suddenly, you know, male pattern baldness goes away. We stumbled on this. We don't know why it works. Bipolar is not a form of convulsion, and yet this medicine we developed for seizures works on it. And I was completely sold.
I knew it, because some people would be troubled by that, and the placebo response would be dulled by we can't figure out the mechanism.
Yeah,
but you are into this.
I was like, okay,
mystery magic drug. Sign me up.
I love when doctors tell me they don't know what a thing is.
It makes it seem very authentic and honest.
It does.
This is so good that even though I can't explain it, I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah, the MD and the PhD are like, look, this is just one of those things where God intervened.
This has actually led to, I mean, the fact that many of these drugs are good for treating the patient's well-being about their asthma while not actually helping them breathe better,
right,
has led to a real divide in the medical community. Because there are some people who will, you know, generally, I think the consensus would be, look, asthma is life-threatening. You don't want to give patients the sense of false well-being. You want them to take their symptoms seriously and, you know, be aware of what's actually happening to them. But there's a whole group of people who are like, wait, is that the most important thing? Like, maybe the vibes are the most important thing. Like, I think it's Yale, I think, that now has a whole school of placebo research. And it's run by this guy who straight out says, yeah, I don't care if there's an objective benefit. I think it's time to start asking if that really is the ultimate good of medicine.
I think if you made a pill that was like one third codeine, one third LSD, and one third aspirin, it would cure 90% of disease.
It has to be the right color.
Yeah, it'd be green,
and it has to be shaped like the Flintstones car.
It'd be shaped like the Flintstones car. It'd be chewable, and I think that would. I mean, you know, because yeah, right. What are we looking for? Ultimately, it's the quality of life argument. Are you looking to preserve, or you know, like cut out the disease? It's the question that a lot of people with cancer have. Do I want to go through chemo or do I want to live as long as I can?
I'm really sympathetic to that, but I am fundamentally a let's shrink the tumor guy, you know? And I think it's just a matter of temperament.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, there are a lot of people.
If we can't shrink the tumor, the vibes become very important. While I still have the tumor.
Shrink the tumor.
Yeah, then I'll handle the vibes. Let Spotify handle the vibes.
And that concludes the longest episode of Omnibus yet.
Is that true?
Not yet. We're on our way. The Placebo Effect, entry 946.is3821, certificate number 42734 in the Omnibus.
Maybe we should have made it a little shorter, given that I was probably giving you COVID during this episode.
Unbelievable. I mean, really unbelievable. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that I survive this COVID exposure, and even more unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, you can read Ken gloating about having killed me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Ken Jennings.
I already have a backup Omnibus host in mind, so.
Who? Is it Miam?
It's Johnny Gilbert.
He's 97 years old. He's not going to live as long as I am, even with COVID.
He's 94. That's why I had to give 94. You COVID. There was no way he was going to outlive you, and I had to resort to underhanded means.
You can look on Twitter at Omnibus Project. I am sadly lurking there, and you should ignore me.
Don't poke the bear.
Ignore me. If you see me retweet anything, just scroll on by at John Roderick.
He's like a T-Rex. If you don't move, he can't see you.
I can't see you. It's also a zombie, right? If you don't make any sound, a zombie can't find you.
Is that right?
I don't. There's so many movies with so many different ideas of what zombies are. I swear there was some zombie movie. Was it Generation Z? Some movie like that where the zombie had to make a sound?
You'd think they could see.
I hate zombie movies is what it all boils down to. If you love zombie movies and want to argue with me about it, write Ken at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Mindy will read your email, give it to Ken, and if it mentions my name, Ken won't send it to me and I'll never see it.
I sent you emails yesterday.
I know, that was pretty nice. You can mail us actual letters, hard letters, and soft letters to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Looks like you got a little mailbag over there.
We haven't recorded in so long. This stuff has really been piling up. Our friend David, the cartoonist from Portland, sent us one of his beautifully embellished envelopes, to the degree that I kind of feel guilty about how much time must have gone into this watercolor of the Hudson brothers.
He works so hard, but he's very talented. Oh my God, it's so awesome.
Isn't that great?
It's so awesome.
I'm mad at the postal carrier who's had to stamp it in and ruin it with a postmark.
That's so awesome. I love that you opened it with like your fat finger instead of with a letter opener. You just stuck your finger in one side and...
It's not ripped.
It's totally ripped.
That's the margin. He also, in it, we have a motion discomfort bag containing...
That's awesome.
Mini comics about two recently released Omnibus entries, Safety Coffins, and the video game Crash of 1983. This is beautiful work. We're going to put this on the Patreon, and whether you're a Patreon supporter or not, you should look up David Chelsea's cartooning. Look at these.
Let me see.
If you want to remember every weird beat of those two shows.
I love a cartoon.
It's like a 36-panel page. It's like Watchmen threw up all over itself.
These are so much better than our actual show notes. I wish that we were...
They're so much better than the actual show.
That we were smart enough to do these as show notes. I feel like some of... There's a real R. Crumb quality to some of these illustrations that I'm super into.
I assume he would take that as a... compliment. Now I'm just opening random stuff now.
This drawing of Alice Blunden, it just looks like a crumb. So send us wonderful things like this. The bar is pretty high here.
We also have, what do we have here? Here's a postcard from Rebecca, who is at the Emergency Relocation Facility for Congress, which is a resort called the Greenbrier.
Yes, in West Virginia.
In West Virginia. You know about the Greenbrier?
I sure do.
It's a picture of the blast doors, which are, you know, maybe War Games thickness, if not Tron thickness.
This is where
speaking of Dabney Coleman.
This is where the Congress was going to all like get in their limos and helicopters and race out of Washington, D.C. As the bombs were falling, and they were going to reconvene with their Comey secretaries underneath this resort hotel in the mountains.
Unfortunately, Madison Cawthorn had given the Russians a tour of the facility the day before, and the mob knew where to, the bombs all knew where to find it. Here's also a letter from CJ, who apparently is part of an ongoing campaign to get me to like Stockton, California more. Is this,
Stockton?
Have I been anti-Stockton in the past? I guess he needs to tell me all about Benjamin Holt, a transplant to Stockton, who invented no less than the Caterpillar. And he sent us some...
By Caterpillar, he means Caterpillar tractor.
Well, you cannot invent the insect pupa, or larva pupa, the Caterpillar.
Sure, okay. Negative Nelly.
I mean, only God can make a tree.
True.
Or a caterpillar.
True. Poems are made, however, by fools like us.
Tidbit for John, Holt tractors replaced horses during World War I to transport artillery. Their design is what inspired the tanks on British and French tanks. Those would have been the treads on British and French tanks. That would have been the first tank treads, right?
There we go.
Without Stockton, California, we would have lost World War I, and the Kaiser would be a global dictator right now. He would be 187 years old.
How do you feel about that? Well, you know,
Stockton
is actually going to very tangentially figure in our next episode as well, because it's on the San Joaquin River.
Well, you're really giving people a cliffhanger for Thursday. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sending us things.
Thank you. You can talk about these things that we've just discussed and all episodes with other futurelings by going to Facebook or other social media sites and look up futurelings, and they are indubitably going to be in those places and chatting.
It really is indubitable.
They're great chatters.
You cannot dube it. Cannot be dubed.
But above all else, if you love Omnibus, you enjoy our show, please support us by going to patreon.com/omnibusproject and signing up to contribute to the production and maintenance of the show. And there are lots of wonderful benefits that you can discover once you're there. So just go to patreon.com/omnibus and support our program.
Today's show, in fact, was would not have existed were it not for a Patreon supporter. Tim gave at the Washing Bear level for 6 months and was able to suggest a show topic. And on his list was the placebo effect, which, as I was recovering from COVID and thinking, is this a cough? Is this shortness of breath? Is this a tickle or a sniffle?
This is a topic that John will interrupt me 400 times in the first hour.
But I will get revenge by giving him the novel coronavirus. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that this catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this very recording, like all our recordings, maybe... our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.